Hi, look at this. It's Dutch the Podcast. Welcome back. My name is Mike, and right there is Tom Byfoot. He's a publisher of Dutch the Magazine, and of course, executive producer and host right here of Dutch the Podcast. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Now, I out of the gate owe you, and of course, today's guest, an apology, because you you managed to do this interview twice, and not by choice. So I apologize for that, because I had some digital issues. By the way, speaking of digital issues, on a positive note, we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But thank you to Stuart. Who's our guest today, Tom?
It's Stuart Billinghurst. Now, of course, our listeners are not going to hear it twice, so that's okay. We had a wonderful conversation with Stuart twice about his life as an expat in the Netherlands. Now, Stuart, of course, is known to our readers, Dutch the Magazine, as a regular contributor. He draws a very funny comic strip for the magazine, and he writes a bi-monthly column about his experiences as an Englishman in the Netherlands. And that leads him into very funny and hilarious situations at times.
He is an awful lot of fun to speak with. I think you'll enjoy this interview. I did twice, so did Tom, and so did Stuart. I hope you enjoy it, the ones that you're going to see it. Let's have a look at that now.
We're talking to Stuart Billinghurst, who is, as we introduced, one of our longtime contributors to Dutch the Magazine. We're very excited to have Stuart on the show today, joining us all the way from the Netherlands. Stuart, maybe let's start by introducing yourself. Who is Stuart Billinghurst?
I'm Stuart Billinghurst. I'm an Englishman living in the Netherlands. I've lived here for about 24 years now. I sort of describe myself as a very accident-prone person. I'm always getting myself into weird and crazy situations, which is, you know, living in another country, another language, that can lead to a lot of things. Even the way I actually ended up living here was completely by accident as well. I'm a husband and a father. I have a Dutch wife, and we have two kids. And I'm a computer game designer by trade.
Designer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That sounds like a very cool job. And do you do that for a company in the Netherlands?
I do. I work for Guerrilla Games in Amsterdam, which is a part of Sony. So we made the Horizon games, and before that, the Killzone games, all for the PlayStation.
That's wonderful. Talking about the accident proneness to our listeners, we're recording this for the second time because you were the first episode of Dutch the Podcast that somehow got wiped from the hard drive before we managed to publish it. So my apologies to you.
That's how accident prone I am, which kind of affects other things that I do and involve with.
Okay, so you mentioned you lived in the Netherlands almost 25 years. Actually, I've been in Canada for 25 years, so our path, you know, our planes might have crossed the sky and we're heading the other way. But how did you end up in the Netherlands? And you mentioned a Dutch wife, so part of the question was going to be what keeps you there, but I think that's clear then. And on the other hand, you could have also chosen to have settled in the United Kingdom, I guess. How you got there, you said by accident a little bit.
Yeah, it was completely by accident. I had no plans to move to the Netherlands. I didn't even plan to move to another country. I'd been out of college for about a year, and I was looking for a job. I studied theater design, and it was a really hard industry to get into. And then a friend of mine suggested looking for a job in computer games, which is why I'm sort of now a computer game designer. The reasoning being that designing computer games at the time, we thought, like, oh, it'd be like designing a stage set, but in a computer. I later discovered it was very different. But I started looking for a job in the computer game industry, and I was looking through all these magazines in the job advertisements, computer game magazines, and I found one, and it was in a British gaming magazine, and it was an advert for a job in game design, but it had no address to it. And the email address was a .com address, and I just assumed it'd be somewhere in Britain. So I applied, and it was only until a few weeks later that I got the email back offering me a job interview and that they would pay for my flights to Amsterdam that I discovered the job actually was in the Netherlands. And then at that point, I was thinking, I don't know if I actually want to go and work in the Netherlands, but I'll go to the interview anyway, because yeah, it's an opportunity, and plus also it's a free day trip to another country, so I'll go. And then, went for the interview, wasn't expecting much of it, went back home, and then a week or two later, got another email saying that they would like me to come and work at the company. And I spent a little while thinking, like, okay, is this what I really want? I don't know. But at the time, it was a six-month contract, so I just figured, okay, well, I'll just go. I'll just give it a try. I don't want to miss this opportunity. Did the first 6 months, and then have ended up staying.
That's amazing. You didn't even realize that you were applying to. Had you been in Holland before on vacation or something like that?
Nope. My first time in the country. And it was also, I was 21, 22. I'd been living with my parents up to that point. So not only was it moving to another country, it was also moving to live by myself for the first time ever.
So how did you even find a place to live? How did that work out? You spoke obviously no Dutch at the time. A lot of most people in the Netherlands speak possible English, but still, when you're 21 years old and you're coming straight from your parents' home, that must be quite daunting.
It was, and I didn't really think about how daunting it was going to be. I didn't realize it until I sort of actually got here. And I was kind of a bit naively unprepared. I just booked a hotel for the first few days, figured I'll get to the country, and then I'll start looking for a place to live. And I can only get a hotel for so many days. So if I haven't found a place by then, I'll just book another hotel. Not thinking about the fact that I was coming in the middle of tourist season. So I had like one or two days left in the hotel I was in, and then I went to the tourist center to try and see if they could help me find another hotel, and there was absolutely nothing. So what am I gonna do? And I actually very nearly at that point gave up, because it did get very daunting at that point. Like, okay, well, I've come here completely unprepared. What am I gonna do? And I phoned one of my friends who gave me the best advice ever at the time. When I told him, I think I'm gonna come home and forget about this crazy adventure. He basically said to me, like, you've only been there for a few days, just stay, just give it a chance. You haven't even started the job yet. And he was right, I'd gone a few days earlier, I hadn't even started the actual job yet. So luckily, thanks to him, I stayed. He never remembers giving me that advice whenever I bring up the story, but it was what made me stay in the country. And then I started the job, and I spoke with them about, like, I'm having trouble like figuring out where I'm going to stay. And like, oh, did no one tell you about it before you came over? We got a company apartment. You can stay up for a couple of months. So very luckily landed on my feet there, stayed at the company apartment, and then got to know some people in the company. And then one of them was looking for a flatmate. So at that point, moved in, and then I've lived in other places since. But luckily it sort of all worked out smoothly in the end.
That's great. So, interesting to hear. Now, was the company you're going to work for, were they mainly English speakers, or because you were probably immersed into a Dutch environment very quickly in that way?
Yeah, back then when I joined, I think it was predominantly Dutch, and there were a few of us that were from different countries, mostly from English-speaking countries, and everyone at the company could speak English, but there'd still be times when it'd be normal for there to be Dutch conversations in meetings and stuff. If they sort of forgot or didn't notice that one of us was in the meeting, they would start talking Dutch. But then as time went on, it became more official that the English was the predominant language that we all communicate in the company. Obviously, if there's like a meeting with just Dutch people, then they still sort of have that meeting in Dutch. But where before it was so many situations where walk into a Dutch conversation and sort of try and get in, now it's like, now everyone mostly speaks English around the office.
That's typical, and I think they do try their best, although they do like to take make fun of Anglos, as I call them, as well, right?
Oh, definitely. But I what I really enjoy is I get my revenge, because we speak English around the office so much, they kind of overlook the fact that by now I can speak quite a decent amount of Dutch. So if I just start joining in the Dutch conversation, it freaks them out. It's really funny. And they're like, oh yeah, no, of course.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You speak Dutch. And then by the time they've got over that shock, then they start trying to catch me out with really complex Dutch.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, hey, Stuart, obviously you're very creative, theater design and game design. You have been one of the longest contributors to Dutch the Magazine. You do a comic strip and you write a column. And I can say your column, when we get reactions back from our readers, is all easily one of the most popular items in the magazine. How did that come about? Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And we're doing a reader survey at the moment on our website. So just started it. So we'll see what feedback we get. But how did you end up doing the strip and the column?
A long time ago, I started writing a blog just about all the kind of crazy situations and adventures I got myself into. And I started doing cartoons to go with that as well. And then at some point I got an email from Paula, who works on the magazine. I think she just sort of came across my blog and asked if I would be interested in sharing some of my stories there as well and doing a comic strip as well. So yeah, that's how I got into it. I really enjoy doing it.
Oh, well, we enjoy reading them, so that's great. Now, you'd started a blog online with, you know, what I would call gentle, light-hearted satire about the Dutch. And it almost seems like that's a genre to itself. The Undutchables have been around since the 80s, good friends of the magazine. We cover in this month's magazine another online satirist doing a blog called Let's Double Dutch. And then, of course, there's Greg Shapiro, who's well-known. And why do you think there's such a market for that kind of humor about the Dutch?
I don't know. I think the English, we've always sort of been good at kind of that sort of poking gentle fun. Like we poke fun, but not to be mean, but because we kind of... it's kind of like a way of us showing affection if we poke fun at something. Obviously you can cross the line, but so we're also very good at self-deprecating humor, which I think kind of makes English humor much more approachable as well. I think it's that. I think it's just we're sort of just having fun, and I think the Dutch are also really good as well at kind of self-deprecating humor and not taking themselves too seriously. So I think that's kind of why the two mesh together really well. We have a similar style of just we don't take ourselves seriously, and we can joke about ourselves and we can joke about each other.
Yeah, and we're in the Netherlands, of course, very accustomed to English humor. All the British sitcoms that are shown on television are very popular typically. So And you know, we're close neighbors, so I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, you just described how you ended up in the Netherlands, and you were totally unprepared. I mean, you were very quite honest about that.
Yeah.
So there must have been a bit of a culture shock. What are the things that most surprised you in those first few weeks or months that you lived and worked in the Netherlands?
So much. It wasn't like there was like a huge, big, like one big, huge cultural difference, but there was like lots of smaller cultural differences. A big one, obviously, is the language. Again, going back to kind of being very naive and unprepared. Before I started studying Dutch, it didn't even occur to me that a language could have a different sentence structure. So that just confused me, like one afternoon trying to just word for word translate something with a dictionary and just being confused by sentence structure and stuff like that. The Dutch directness was a big surprise at first, especially because English people, we're very famous for beating around the bush and kind of avoiding difficult subjects, where the Dutch will sort of go straight to the heart of the subject, which I found really surprising at first, but I've actually learned to really like and appreciate that kind of being honest is the sort of way I see it, where, you know, English is just like, sometimes it just feels like, you know, just say what you mean.
That must come across if you've been immersed in that English culture for 21 years as a bit aggressive, even. Do you not feel like, why do they have it in for me?
That was it at first. I think that's where I kind of that was the initial feeling of having come from a culture where we don't do that. But then having just kind of experienced it over time, kind of then like, well, no, it's not like the Dutch are trying to be mean or anything. They just want to be honest. But I do know a lot of people in the expat community are sort of taken aback by it at first and kind of have to get used to it.
I remember another one of those satirists, Brian Bramson, Uncle Brian, who also wrote for the magazine for a while, had a chapter in his book, literally the title of the chapter is "Why Are They So Blunt?" And he goes into a number of examples of where he was really known to take it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there still are cases where sometimes it can go a bit too far. I remember one situation where I was at a supermarket and there was a girl working there, and I tried talking to her in Dutch, and then she just suddenly said to me, "You're English, right?" And I went, "Yeah," thinking, "Oh, this conversation is going well." And she just said to me, "Your Dutch is horrible. Don't speak Dutch ever again."
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, and the English way of going about that would have been more complimenting on you on your effort. Although there could have been probably there might have even been a dig in an English reply that the Dutch wouldn't even recognize. That's one of the problems that we have adapting to. Like Canada is known to be very polite and also a little bit not direct at all. So if we often miss the nuances, and we think someone's really nice to us when it later turns out that it wasn't really meant all that nice. Now you've been in the Netherlands for 20 plus years, so there must have been things, and I think you allude to the fact that you're actually now used to the directness and you appreciate it. But are there other things that initially surprised you and that you you can place much better now that you find more natural, more normal?
I'm trying to think. The one of the things I really liked that I've also learned to kind of adopt is the way the Dutch are also much more laid back and relaxed than the English. So not saying that was kind of surprising at first, but saying I've kind of learned to adopt myself, which I really kind of appreciate. Trying to think of other examples.
Well, let's turn the question around. Are there things that you will really never get used to?
I will never understand herring, raw herring. I will never...
My favorite.
I've sort of learned to like drop. At first, as the first time I experienced like double salt drop, I was like, no, this is terrible. And then a Dutch friend challenged me to try more drops. So I kind of did that. It was kind of like a whole experiment I did on the blog once. So I kind of learned to appreciate that. But Dutch herring is one I'll never learn. I've considered doing it as a kind of challenge, but no, I'm not that brave.
For our listeners who are not aware of it, so the Dutch herring, it's pickled salted herring, but essentially raw.
Yeah.
And you take it by the tail, and you lift it up, and you just move your neck backwards, sort of, and you slide it into your mouth, eating it raw. Okay.
Even hearing you describe it, I'm just like, no, please.
The other one. Go ahead.
And then the other one is just language things. Like I can speak okay Dutch now, but things like de and her, I think every non-Dutch person struggles with that. Every time I've asked a Dutch person trying to explain to me, they sort of start telling me the rules, but then it's like they themselves, as they're explaining the rules, realize like, oh no, wait, this rule doesn't apply here or in this situation or in that situation or in that situation. Or actually, you just need to be Dutch to understand it.
Yeah, that's one of the disadvantages. You, in English, there's just the one definite article, right? So
yeah.
when we learn French or German, we have the same issue. I had an English friend in Amsterdam who had figured one thing out. One trick is, you know how the Dutch, and this is also typically Dutch, I think, have those diminutives, right? When they put J at the end of a word, like a cup, a cop, is in Kopje, and but every word that is put in that form is het. So he started saying, using that form for everything, which sounded so funny and so odd, but at least he sorted out the het situation.
I've used that trick, and it drove my wife crazy.
I can imagine. For listeners who want to read up on that, we put all our issues, our back issues, Dutch the Magazine, on the web for subscribers. And I wrote a couple of articles about that language feature and how that was used. So that makes sense. Now, you said you have children. How old are they?
My son just turned 8 and my daughter's 11. And they both speak better Dutch than I ever will be able to.
And probably very good English as well.
I was used to them correcting my Dutch, but I was very surprised one day a year or two ago when my daughter actually corrected my English.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. So how did they take, how did these Dutch kids, they're growing up in the Netherlands, they're going to Dutch school, so they're probably a little more Dutch than they are English. How do they take their English dad in, social environments, picking them up from school or, whatever?
I think they're very used to it. I think like most kids, they probably find it a bit embarrassing sometimes. I think like when it's like on the playground and I'm struggling through a Dutch conversation, trying to arrange a play date with another parent with their children for my kids. Like sometimes my kids will step in and kind of feel like, okay, Papa needs rescuing now. we'll handle this conversation.
Yeah, that makes sense, and that's something that a lot of our listeners will recognize as well. A lot of our listeners are second generation Dutch in Canada who had to go through the same thing with their parents in the 60s and the 70s. So one other thing I was wondering is, you've been in the Netherlands for such a long time now, but you regularly visit back home, I presume it's not that far. Are there things in the UK that really stand out to you now that, were natural before that now, but now that you've lived in Holland for a long time, seem peculiar or strange?
I think definitely some of the things I was mentioning about Dutch people being very much more laid back. When I go back to London and kind of just see how chaotic everything is and everything's kind of rushing around and stuff like that, that where I was kind of very comfortable and used to that before I moved over to the Netherlands. Now it's like after a few days, I kind of feel like, okay, I've had enough of that busyness now. I think that's the main thing. I don't know. I feel like just in general, a lot of things run a lot more smoother in the Netherlands than they do in London. And particularly in London. So kind of seeing that kind of thing, I really noticed that kind of like standing out, like just even things like Dutch infrastructure, even, I'm sure there's criticisms that could be leveled and it's like so much better than the English infrastructure, particularly London. Those things I really notice when I go back.
Yeah, and that jumps out at me when I visit the Netherlands as well. I tend to forget how extremely well organized the country is and how meticulous, and maybe that's also part of the directness. Everything's planned out but it's funny if you think about it, because on the one hand you've got the laid backness that you talk about, which is really noticeable, but on the other hand everything seems to be very well organized.
Yeah, I think the Dutch kind of have an element of like, well, we're laid back, but if something needs doing, then it gets done.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. And we could have a long discussion about whether that goes back on the fight against the water and the sea level, or what causes it. Maybe it's Calvinism. Who knows? But it's definitely noticeable, I think. And that's interesting for us on this side of the ocean as well. We talked a little bit about you learning Dutch, and you said you talked about the head. Are there any other? Let me ask. How good your Dutch? Do you speak Dutch in the office now? You mentioned occasionally they're taken by surprise.
That's very rare when it happens, admittedly. I can speak Dutch okay. I don't feel like it's good enough level of Dutch for the amount of time I've lived in the country. And that's partly because the first 8 years I was pretty lazy with it. I took lessons, but living in Amsterdam, it was very easy to rely on English. Everyone there spoke English. And it wasn't until I met my wife that I started speaking Dutch a lot more. She was really good in English, but then we just sort of started communicating in Dutch as well. And particularly whenever we were visiting her family, because they didn't speak that much English. So suddenly I kind of noticed I had this use for all this Dutch that I'd been soaking up over the years. And I've kind of like steadily gotten better, but there's definitely a lot more improvements I could make. What I'm trying at the moment actually is reading in Dutch. So I'm reading a Dutch book at the moment. And that's actually, I found that kind of the best way to kind of help improve my Dutch now. And we watch a lot of Dutch television together as well. So I'm a lot better at understanding than I am speaking it. I'll still get sentence structure wrong or the slightly wrong word or pronunciations. It's led to some very kind of bizarre, embarrassing situations as well. The kind of getting elements of my Dutch wrong sometimes, or misunderstanding what someone was saying.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, that and there are some sounds in Dutch that are very hard if they're not part of your native language. Just like,
oh yeah, I think I'll never get rid of my English accent.
Yeah, no, and you know, the same goes for us. Obviously, there's, you know, the number of Dutch people have problems saying the TH sounds and various difficult diphthongs, absolutely. So you wrote a column a few months back comparing the Netherlands and England and turning it into a little competition of which one's better. And very wisely, at the end of your column, it turned out to be a draw. But you talked about appreciating directness after you got used to it. Are there other things where you say, well, this is definitely something that the Dutch, I prefer the Dutch way, and these are things that I'll never get used to. I wish the Dutch could adopt the English way a bit more.
No, I think the kind of things I've already mentioned are the things that I kind of both really appreciate and haven't got used to yet, like the laid backness and stuff. I think in a weird way, I don't feel like I could live anywhere else now. I feel very, on the one hand, I feel very integrated. On the other hand, I don't think I'll ever kind of stop feeling like an English person living in the Netherlands, even though I'm planning to very soon go for Dutch nationality. The reason why that process has taken so long is a whole nother story about me getting things wrong. I kind of can't imagine living anywhere else now. I feel kind of it's kind of hard to explain. I feel both integrated and not fully integrated at the same time, but I'm kind of fine with that equilibrium. It kind of feels settled.
It's a sentiment that I think is very recognizable for a lot of immigrants anywhere in the world. I'm never going to be 100% Canadian. But I've lived here for 25 years, and in many ways, I do feel Canadian. So, but I think it's an enrichment of your life to have those two cultures to fall back on.
Definitely.
So I mentioned earlier on, I'm going to draw to a close here a little bit, but I mentioned earlier on that you're a very, very popular contributor to the magazine. And my only fear is that you run out of material and really hate to miss your strips or your columns. Do you think you ever will, or is there enough going on in that difference between those two cultures that you think you'll have enough inspiration going forward?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm still always kind of getting myself into these weird, bizarre situations. So there's definitely enough stories there. There's even stories from years back that I haven't even shared yet. So I've got more than enough stories to share going forward.
Oh, well, we're very excited about that. Just briefly, you mentioned a blog. I don't know how active you are on it at the moment, but is there a place where our listeners can see some more of your work online, maybe?
I write the blog Accidentally Dutch, alluding to accidentally coming to the Netherlands and kind of settling here. I'm not that active on the moment, but I'm hoping to get back to it soon and kind of start up updating it more when I have more time. And then I'm also on Twitter on accidentally underscore NL, and then you can also find me on Facebook and Instagram on the Accidentally Dutch as well.
Fantastic. You just said on the moment that's Dutchism. So I don't know if that was accidental.
It
Hey, let's is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners before we wrap up?
Well, I was thinking we were talking earlier about learning the language and kind of how how that goes. There's one story in particular that came to mind for that question that I didn't say yet, but there was a time, it was a few years ago, I was with my wife at that point, and we went to visit a friend, a joint friend of ours. She knew us both, and on that particular day I was determined, like, I'm going to do nothing but speak Dutch. I really have to improve my Dutch now, so nothing but speak Dutch. And then it sort of went okay. I mean, this was back when my Dutch wasn't as good as it is now. Good. So she could invite us in, like ask if we want tea and everything, and I'm responding in Dutch and everything. And then at some point it sort of starts to become a bit of a struggle, but I'm like, no, I'm gonna do it. But what it sort of resulted in was me being very quiet a lot of the conversation. But then where it got funny was someone else, a friend of the friend we were visiting, also came over to visit, and we didn't know this person. And I was still sort of trying to do the whole I'll speak only Dutch kind of thing. And then what would happen is, for my benefit, my wife and our friend would repeat anything that was said to me in simpler Dutch. And I would kind of respond in very simple Dutch as well, or kind of nod because I didn't know how to respond. And then at some point, I noticed that this other person that didn't know us was kind of looking at me every time, like, oh. And then as this went on for a few more minutes, and then at some point, I thought, I'm just going to respond in English here to see what happens. So my wife repeated something to me in simpler Dutch, and I responded in English. And then the woman that didn't know us suddenly looked shocked, like, oh. And then my wife said, oh, my man is Hayes Engels. And she said in Dutch, oh, I thought he was mentally handicapped.
Oh,
So because of my like trying to speak Dutch and kind of not really being able to, and then having to repeat stuff very simply, it kind of led to the situation
yeah.
where she didn't even realize I was English. I mean, as a compliment, she must have thought I was Dutch, but
Yeah, no, I can see that. That's interesting. Yeah, and anything else, Stuart?
No, I mean, I would just like anyone who is l moving to another country, be it the Netherlands or somewhere else, I would just like give the same kind of advice that I was given that kind of led to me living here for a few years. It can be scary at first being an expat moving to another country, but just give it a chance, give it a try, and then you might discover you love it like I did and end up staying for over 20 years.
I think that's great advice. That's a beautiful place to stop. Thank you so much for taking the time, Stuart, to
No
record for
problem.
a
Thank
second
you.
time. And we look forward to reading a lot more of your material in the magazine.
Thank you. I look forward to taking part in the magazine more.
Well, you know what? That is a great perspective, Tom. Anybody who's been an immigrant to any country experiences these difficulties. The difference is Stuart really does it with his own tongue firmly planted in his cheek and a good attitude about it.
Yeah, I agree absolutely, and it's such fun to have him on board with the magazine. You know, there's, as we talked about, there's this culture in the Netherlands of Americans, British, Canadians coming over making fun of the Dutch, but in a very good-natured way. And there was this couple, Laurie and Colin, who wrote this book called The Undutchables in the 1980s, and it was a smash hit in the Netherlands. And they are still going strong on their 17th edition or whatever it is.
Oh wow!
And Stuart fits right in that mold. So we're very, very lucky to have him on board at Dutch the Magazine. And of course, you mentioned digital issues, right?
Well, hold on a second. Very different digital issues. The digital issues we experience technically with the program are the other end of the spectrum of what we're going to talk about now. But yeah, apparently you have digital issues too, huh?
Yeah, I do. And I love the connection you make there. We have digital issues of the magazine right on our website. For any subscriber, print subscribers get access to our full back catalog of issues in digital format. So that's another great incentive to subscribe to the magazine in Canada and the US in print. But of course, we now also have a worldwide digital subscription model, a lot cheaper than the print because we don't have to mail it out. But you still get that great content that we have in the magazine, which includes Stuart's work.
You know, it's very interesting, Tom. The other day I had the digital issue of last month's issue open, and on my computer, it was just sitting there beautifully. And as I flipped through the pages, my colleague Peter went by and went, what are you watching right now? And I said, I'm actually reading Dutch the Magazine. He said, that looks beautiful on the big screen, the imagery. I find it a very enjoyable read online. I hope you do as well. And like you say, Tom, it's a better value because it is digital. So yeah, go and check that out for sure.
And at dutchthemedia.com, that's where you can sign up. That's where you can log in once you've signed up and see all that wonderful content that we've produced over the last 12, 13, 14 years.
Speaking of content, you know what else you'll find there? If you go to Dutch the Media, is Tom's book, which is a really wonderful, it's really Tom's experience in reverse here in Canada, seeking out the Dutch. And tell us a little bit about that before we go, Tom.
Yeah, so this book is completely about the Dutch in North America. Today, and historical, I trace the footsteps of a Dutch president of the United States. The only president of the United States, his name was Martin Van Buren, whose native language was not English. He learned Dutch at home and only started speaking English later. There's a lot of interesting stuff about that. I visit Dutch communities across North America, places like Pella, Iowa, Linden, Washington, that people may have heard of or may not. If they haven't, even more reason to read it. There's a brief bios of well-known and influential Dutch Canadians and Dutch Americans. And there's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of my initial experiences as an immigrant to Canada and what I found peculiar. So yeah, all in all, I believe there's 43 or 44 articles or chapters in the book. And it's called Hiding in Plain Sight, and you can find it on dutchthemedia.com.
I think it's a really interesting journey that you took, because it actually, in my mind, it makes me think that you kept your link to your roots as an immigrant to Canada for a lot of reasons, not just for familiarity, but for emotional reasons that, you know, tie us back to home. And once again, today's perspective from Stuart on the other side was really interesting. I live in a two-language household. I know what it's like to be able to understand more than you can say. And so a great perspective from him. And of course, next time on Dutch the Podcast, another great interview. Don't forget to subscribe. Tell a friend about the show, and we'll see you here next time. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Mike.